I'm Anita Lustria, and this is Faith Conversations. Today on the podcast, John Lustria is back in the house. Woo, big applause. Hi, John.
Turned. I'm back.
Yes. And I'm excited because a couple of things. One, got great response from having you on last time as we viewed a movie and then discussed it and did a spiritual practice or two. And you kind of took charge, which I'm going to have you do again today because I really enjoyed that last podcast. And for those who have not caught that, you might want to go back and listen to John Lustria last month and I talking about the movie The Way. And today we're going to talk about a different movie. And again, I'll have you kind of lead things, but you also threatened me with life and limb if I didn't bring a listener email to the podcast.
I'm the advocate for the listeners.
Thank goodness somebody is, because
including Sarah's Aunt Connie, who I was just talking to last night. Apparently she listens at the very least when I'm on, but she was going through some of the podcasts you've done and she wants to listen to a few of the others. So shout out to Aunt Connie listening, hopefully.
Awesome. All right. Love that. Good deal. Hi, Aunt Connie. I'm thrilled. Always thrilled for a new listener. And I want to reiterate getting in touch with me here at the podcast so that I can read these listener emails that come in. And you can email me. The address is producer@anitalustria.com, producer@anitalustria.com, which is also the way you can give a gift to PayPal. Same email address to use on PayPal. We are listener supported. Deeply appreciate that. I've heard from a number of you giving gifts to the podcast, and I'm so grateful. Really do appreciate that. And gosh, I think that's all the housekeeping stuff, John. Shall we dive in with this email first, right?
Let's do it.
All right. So I heard from Kelly, a listener to the podcast. She said, I really enjoyed your podcast with John. And this is the last one we did together about the movie. She said, I first remember, and of course, you introduced some things that were from Harry Potter and the Sacred Text, which is another podcast. So hence the reference to Harry and all of that. She said, I remember first reading Harry Potter, loving Dumbledore's explanation that Harry's mother's sacrifice protected him from death and blah, blah, blah. And so she goes on, you know, giving metaphor for that and all of that and what she, you know, learned from that series. And of course, way back when it first came out, it was really vilified in Christian circles. And she was commenting on that. She remembers telling Christian friends how much she loved the message.
I remember you doing a midday program.
Oh, yes.
Like,
yes.
Know. Is this okay? Is this safe? Or something
oh, yeah.
To that effect. It was great.
Yeah. Yes, it was great. I, however, did get slammed with negative emails, but lots of positives as well.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so she goes on. She talks about Les Mis and, you know, some symbolism there, et cetera. And then eventually says, I come from a hyper-traditional fundamentalist background that's terribly suspicious of, you know, spiritual practices, because you had introduced Lectio Divina, as we did that with the movie last time. And, you know, goes on to talk about that. And in the end, she just said, I'm so touched, too, by the mother-son relationship. Today, the teacher was the one taught. And so, you know, the son teaches his mother. Anyway, so that was really fun. And the podcast listeners, she said. So, yeah, it is wonderful to have you on. And, you know, you learn new things and share them with me and hopefully vice versa. But it is a lot of fun. And I'm glad that you're back. So welcome.
Well, it's good to be back. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And for those maybe that haven't come
out, always nice to hang out with my mom.
Nice. And for those who maybe haven't caught a podcast with you on it before, just tell where you work. And you're married and live in Charlestown, West Virginia, kind of outside DC. And where do you work?
Yes. So Charlestown, West Virginia, two words.
Yes.
It's near Harper's Ferry, which is a beautiful place with a wonderful national park. But I work at the National Museum of Civil War Medicine, which is over in Frederick, Maryland. And it's a very, Very exciting place. Someone just left us a review on TripAdvisor that said we didn't know it, the title of the review was "We Didn't Know What We Didn't Know," which is pretty much exactly how I felt when I started working there. I, who had sort of studied history, was shocked at all that I didn't know about medicine. So I couldn't
I
agree
love
more
it.
with the review.
Nice, nice. Well, take it away, John. Where are we going today?
Yes, so the movie that well, we both collaborated, but you kind of took the lead this time on choosing the movie that we're going to go through, and the one that we settled on is the Queen of Katwe. I think I'm saying that right.
I think so. Catway. Yeah, sounds good.
Which is available on Netflix currently, so it's perhaps a little more accessible than The Way, which neither of us had seen this movie before, I think. And it was really good. So I'm going to start things off before we get into the movie. You can do one of two things. A, stop the podcast right now and go watch the movie. Or we're going to help you out to the best of our abilities and do a 30-second recap. I'm going to try and slam about 2 hours worth of movie into about 30 seconds here. So I believe I went first last time, Mom. So I think you're up first this time.
Rats. Okay.
So
All right.
when I say go, I'll count you down. Three, two, one, go.
Queen of Katwe is a set in Uganda, and it has a young girl, part of a family that's deeply impoverished, who finally is able to go to school, and she gets turned on to school by playing chess in what's an after school club. And she has an aptitude for this. She's incredibly smart and goes on to win great awards. And there's a whole lot in between that's difficult, and it's really hard and rewarding. And I is a time up yet? Because this is really a bad description.
That was terrible.
I know it. I thought, how do I could not summarize this one.
This is a tough one. Okay, here we go. I'm gonna give it a shot here.
Do I need to set a timer, or can you set your own there?
I'll set it.
All right, thanks.
Count me down.
All right, in 3, 2, 1, go.
So in Kampala, Uganda, there's a kind of slum area called Katwe where Fiona and her family live. They have very little money. She stumbles into this after-school program where she learns how to play chess. Turns out she's insanely good at it, but her family has no money. She goes to a bunch of chess things. She gets internationally renowned, even though she's like not even 20 years old, and she wins a bunch of tournaments. She tries to become a grandmaster, and things are in her way, but things happen and time. Oh.
Oh, well, that was better than me. So maybe between the two of us, we sort of give a fuller profile.
Yeah, I kind of got garbled in the end. Basically, I think we hit most of the important points. She goes to a bunch of these international tournaments, and it's slightly unclear as to what her status is at the end. She's either like a grandmaster in chess or close to, at basically at like the age of 19 or 20.
And I guess I will add that, she had a real aptitude for chess, could work things out, many moves ahead in her mind as she's playing the game. All while learning this, she herself did not know how to read, and eventually learns how to read and is able to go to school. You have to own a uniform to go to school in many African countries, and especially in more rural areas, and many families can't afford a uniform, so hence the child or children cannot go to school. So, long story short, there was a benefactor, that's maybe not the right word, someone who really cares and invests in her intellectual self, as well as beyond just that, a teacher, and eventually money comes along so she can go to school as well as continue with chess.
Yeah, I guess we didn't really touch on the fact that like they have a chess coach who is this benefactor, mentor type person, Robert, who they mostly just call him Coach, but I think his name is Robert.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, we looked at this movie through the lens of a certain word.
Yeah, and when I first started doing this stuff, because I do this on my own with some friends with a TV show that we particularly enjoy. When we first started doing this, I didn't necessarily know what good using like a lens or a theme to analyze something would be. I thought it was a little hokey, but it really helps kind of focus you in a good way. And truthfully, the theme can be any number of things, depending on mm-hmm. what you're looking at. Because, you know, you can, if you're looking for something, you can find it. And so we were looking at this through the theme of determination. So, Mom, where did you see determination pop out at you?
Okay, kind of everywhere. You know, this was a wonderful word. And in fact, I made note that I actually heard the word used one time in the movie. Mm-hmm. You know, the coach said, I think his wife might maybe said about him, he was so determined to hang on to Fiona and her brothers and right. not let them fall to the wayside, you know, which easily could happen in such deep poverty. But the lens of determination at that you found it looking through that lens, you found it absolutely everywhere. Fiona, the main character, along with Coach Robert, Fiona's mother, talk about a determined woman, so determined to care for her children in the worst of circumstances. And then Coach, so determined to hang on to these kids and not let them, you know, fall again by the wayside. And then Fiona, determined to learn the game of Coach, game of chess, determined to become good, to become great at something. Where did you see determination?
Oh, I mean, pretty much like you said, just about everywhere. The first place it kind of jumped out at me is so, like, the coach is kind of pitching this idea of a chess club to some of the kids. They're at a soccer game or watching soccer or football, as they call it in the movie, or everywhere yes. except here calls it.
Yeah. Yes.
they're out there, and you know, the little, you know, they're boys, you know, they want to play soccer, football. And he's trying to be like, oh, well, have you ever played chess? And they're like, oh, that sounds lame. And the way that he kind of like hooks them with it is like, well, when I was your age, I would play, you know, I would play the city kids, and I would, you know, basically they thought they were so good, and he'd beat them in chess and, you know, presumably get things like a nice watch or something out of it, implying yes. that he would win stuff from them. And he loved seeing how surprised they were that, like, you know, a slum kid could beat the city kids. And they're like, oh, yeah. you know, and so I was very struck that, what appealed to these kids was that they could use chess as an equalizer across wealth yes. and status, chess/competition, and how they were determined to like get better so that they could use chess in some degree to kind of rise above their status.
Yeah, absolutely. I think again, that determination piece was absolutely everywhere, because it seemed like everyone who decided to sign on to be in the chess club, they were serious. I mean, they were serious about learning this game and getting better.
They had something to prove too.
Absolutely. To your point as to what hooked them. I think that's all a part of it.
Mm-hmm. And like, as I was watching this, like, determination and like a competitive desire/drive seemed pretty linked. Determination to win.
Well, and I will say, over against that determination, there's an older sister of Fiona's that's pictured in the movie who takes a very different path. And instead of, you know, buckling down and becoming determined to change her life or to make things different, she gives in to what happens often to young women in that scenario. And she just gave in to all of that and followed the typical path. And that was very hard and sad to watch along the way as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was unclear to me, like, what she did. Like, so she's with this guy that their mom definitely doesn't approve of. You get the sense he's probably not a good guy. But like,
I think if you would watch it again, I think you would find that she fell into prostitution. It's a family film, and so they don't say that.
Right.
But I think
I wasn't sure if that's what they were suggesting, that she like was in a prostitution ring or something like that.
I think that's the implication.
Yeah.
Because it's the only was what she perceived to be the only way to survive.
Right.
And truth be told, if you watch the movie, you will see it is hard, very difficult to keep a roof over one's head.
Yes. Well, and at one point when they're living in like this abandoned church, they literally don't have a roof. They have four walls, but no.
Yes. Right.
Which almost. They get flooded and people almost die. It's not good. But one of the themes that kept coming up in the movie, and especially from your perspective as a parent, what you thought about this. Hmm. So the two different kind of, I guess, parenting perspectives of the coach and then Fiona's mom. So the coach, he has this scene early in the movie. He has him and his wife have like a baby. And he's very determined that his kid, quote, won't have to dig as I did, because he spent lots of time farming and all this. So he's like, you know, he's adamant that chess can be this vehicle. So these kids who are growing up in poverty won't have to live this hard life that their parents had. But Fiona's mom has no frame of reference for what a better life might look like. And she's like, well, I mean, yeah, this maybe isn't ideal, but like, what's so wrong with them doing manual labor and all this stuff? Like, she very much, it takes a long time for her to sort of come around to the coach's vision for what life could look like for them. And honestly, I was kind of in Fiona's mom's corner here. Like, a piece of me was like, yeah, like, who is this guy to come in and say what the best possible life for my kids is supposed to be? I was curious what you thought about that.
Well, I think his view was that education can change a life, because it did change his. Even though he did have to dig and work hard, he was able to go to college and graduated with a degree in engineering. Mm-hmm. Now, struggled to get a job in that field, because so many times in that culture where they happen to be in Uganda, you're hired based on the status of your family, not on your own knowledge and your own education. It was really frustrating. But I think I see it both ways, because I, you know, bring it up to current day. I have seen parents who have that view. I don't want my children to have to do the hard things I had to do. I do think it's a mistake if you take hard things out of the way of your children, because they do not learn a good work ethic. And I've seen some kids grow up and be just not pleasant people to be around. And I don't like to be around them. And I look at it and I go, oh, but it's not exactly the kid's fault. Yes, they have certain decisions that they have made along the way as they've gotten older, but their parents have largely shaped who they've become. And I get really upset at the parents for not allowing them to learn and grow and do some hard things or learn menial tasks. Or I ran into a young man. I love this story. This was just on Thursday. I ate lunch at a Jimmy John's before I went to a small group that I'm a part of from my church. And I watched him. The place was empty except for me, because it was late in the afternoon. And he came out and he was wiping the tables down, and then he wiped every rung of the back of the chair and the seat of the chair. I stopped him and I said, someone taught you well. You could come and clean my house. You are doing a great job. And he said, ma'am, no one taught me how to do this at home. I learned no life skills at home. Now, whether that's 100% accurate, I don't know, but it was kind of sad. He said, Jimmy John's has taught me all I know about cleaning, and my apartment is a nicer place because of what I've learned how to do here. Wow. And I thought, yes. And I'm like, these life skills.
Big points for Jimmy John's there.
Big time. Oh, and I asked him, I said, can I go on to, can I give you a, place. Well, yes. I said, can I go on and give you a review, and where, how do I do it? And I did. And he went on to say, you don't remember that Jimmy John's is clean, but you do remember when you go to places that aren't clean.
Right, right.
And he said, we want you to, we want. And he's exactly right. I'm like, oh my goodness. Oh yeah. I go into every place and I want to be hired as a table cleaner, because seriously, come on people, I'm cleaning the table. You know, you have to clean it up before you sit. So yes, do not take those skills away. But also, she didn't know what she didn't know. And education is a hugely important piece to raise one up to another economic level. So I'm on both sides.
Right. Well, so the scene that really kind of jumped out at me is, so like it's by this point in the film, it's become clear that Fiona is clearly a genius, and that, you know, going to
She's
school,
gifted.
Yeah, going to school could really take things to another level for her and all this stuff. And the coach is trying to pitch to her mom that she should be allowed to do this. And her mom's is like, you know, that sounds great, I guess, but I definitely can't afford it, and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, to us, like, this seemed like basically the coach just says, don't worry about the uniforms. But what it comes down to is he has to convince Fiona's mom why getting an education is even worth it in the first place, which seems bizarre to us,
right.
In, you know, in the first world countries. But like, if you think about it, like going somewhat like her children going to school in a large degree doesn't, it's not that like she doesn't care about their future, but like it doesn't sort of impact her really. She doesn't have a frame of reference for like what getting an education would do. Like, you know, all that she can do is like sell corn to people, mm-hmm. and having her kids no longer be there means that she isn't going to have their corn money.
Right.
And so them going to school is like going to definitely negatively impact her. And it's not really clear what she's going to get out of it. Now, I'm not saying parents are inherently selfish or anything like this, but she's going to have to make a huge sacrifice for a payoff that she has no frame of reference for what it's going to be. Like an engineering job means literally nothing to her. Like what is that?
The coach, I wrote down this quote, and the coach actually didn't say this to the mom. Mm-hmm. He said this to Fiona, but I thought it had implications for everyone in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Coach Robert said, sometimes the place you are used to is not where you belong.
That was quite the quote. I think it's a very challenging quote. Why did you write that down? What did you like
about it? What I liked about it, sometimes a place you are used to, I think it's really easy to become comfortable where you are and not reach for, and not reach your full potential. And not reach your full potential. You can twist the quote so that it's and not reach for more, bigger, better, greater, which is not necessarily better. But I think reaching your potential, becoming all that God intended you to be, you know, opening up like Fiona, expanding her mind that is definitely gifted in many ways and just very, very bright, you know, to not do that, to not learn more, to grow more would be a travesty. And so that's how I saw it, in that positive sense, not in grasping for more in any kind of material way, but grasping for more emotionally, intellectually, spiritually.
Okay. Here we go. I'm starting to finally. So yes, I thought that was very powerful, because that's absolutely true. People can get comfortable and there are better things out there for them. I think why it, like, I found it kind of a tough quote was, mm-hmm. he was, so the place you're used to is not where you belong. In this case, the place that Fiona was used to was like literally where she's from, like where she was born. And to not, the implication is that you don't belong all the time where you're born, which I think sometimes is possibly true, but that felt so tough. And that's why I think I had a lot of sympathy with Fiona's mom, because the message here is that she doesn't belong in this area that she grew up in, which felt hard.
Yes. And I don't agree. Well,
and
I agree with it on one level.
In a way, I'm twisting the quote in a way that I'm sure it was not necessarily intended. But like, I kept coming back to that, that like, you know, certainly Fiona is obviously, you know, amazing and, you know, clearly should have gone to all these tournaments and things like this around the world. But like,
well,
it's like a part of her DNA is like, you know, in catwalk.
Well, and changing our mind, changing our mindset. So this quote was said to her by Coach Robert after she had had a hard loss. Right. And she just went running out of the place. And he went after her. And she just said, I just may as well go home and just sell maize with my mother. I just may, you know, I'm never going to amount to anything. I'm never, that's where I belong. That's, you know, and then out comes Coach Robert. Sometimes the place you're used to is not where you belong. And he, you know, sometimes we need a little slap upside of the face.
Right. And, you know? And actually I didn't connect this, but in the last chess game of the movie, I think it's at the Uganda International, or no, sorry, the Ugandan National Tournament or something. The coach, like Fiona makes a silly mistake or something.
Oh, yes.
You can see him getting down and he stands up and he's like, you belong here. Uh-huh. And of course he's hushed by all the tournament officials because that's like a huge no-no. But
I had not made that correlation either, John. Thank
I
you.
I hadn't either until like we were talking about it. And so like,
nice.
Yeah. Obviously a huge piece of encouragement there.
Yes. Well, you have a spiritual practice that you want to...
Hold on. We can't jump ahead too fast. I haven't even gone through half my list yet here.
Well, excuse me. Pardon me. Carry on.
Let's see. Oh, yes. This I thought was a great thing. So the very first tournament that all the kids go to, it's like a Ugandan junior thing. It's at some kind of prestigious, like finishing
prep school.
School
kind of, yeah.
Like the King's College or I don't know what exactly, but anyway, and they're, you know, very clearly out of place. This is their first tournament and, you know, everyone is all acting all hoity toity and refined and all that. And the kids start to get kind of psyched out before the games. And the coach kind of calms them down by telling them this story about a dog chasing a cat for a meal. And the cat eventually gets away because he says the dog was running for a meal and the cat was running for its life. And so the difference in determination between running for one's life and running for one's meal. And I thought it was a great story. It symbolized the determination that group of kids and especially Fiona would have over time.
Yes, I agree. I loved that. And I was thinking, actually, I misquoted. Coach Robert's wife at one point, this is where the word determined actually showed up in the movie. She said at one point, looking at her husband, you are wearing your determined face. And she wasn't exactly sure what was going to happen next, but she knew that he was determined. And so many times along the way, you know, I've talked a lot about Fiona's mom having to hang in there and hold things together. Honestly, Coach Robert almost equally had to as well.
Yes. And the thing I wrote down about him is the determination of the coach to see value in not only the kids, but really everything, which I felt was such a powerful testament. And like, what a wonderful mindset to be determined to see value in things.
Yes.
which that's something Fiona struggles with quite a bit, partially just because she's young and doesn't know any better. But she struggles to see the value in herself, really, in her own abilities. And, her mom struggles with that just because her mom has led a very hard life,
Yes.
and all that sort of stuff. And so that constant voice to be like, well, to be determined to see the value in things. And he makes some comment after Fiona had a loss, saying, the determination to reset the pieces, and you lost, but you get to play again, and all this, and like just helping people get in the right mindset, which I thought was very wonderful. And really and who knows how it started in real life, but in the film it starts in a really beautiful way. Like Fiona is basically hanging around the doorway of the chess club, and she's kind of like looking in. She doesn't know what's happening, but there's people there, and she presumably has nothing better to do, and she's just sort of hanging out. And the coach said, like, invites her in very intentionally when you didn't necessarily have to do that. Like, sometimes you see people lurking in the doorway, and it's kind of weird, but he's like, "Oh, come in." And his determination to include everyone, and just he was such a delightful, positive voice throughout the film.
Well, and I'll add to that story, he invited her in and said, "Are you hungry? We have porridge."
Right.
You know, because a piece of these kids coming, he fed them every day as well. You know, a big glop of porridge, and that they would not have gotten. And I remember Fiona and her brother going home, and the mother doling out this meager soup, and them pushing it back and saying, "I'm not hungry. You eat this, mother," because they had this porridge and they wanted to make sure their mother got enough to eat. And you know, there are just so many layers to the story that you see that have to do with poverty and its effects, as well as determination and what can happen when you are determined.
Absolutely. And there's a ton we can talk about, but for the sake of moving things along here, one of the final things that one of my favorite quotes came pretty close to the beginning when the one girl's explaining the rules to Fiona. She's talking about if you get your pawn all the way across the board, it can become a queen. And
Oh, yes.
she summed it up by saying, "In chess, the small one can become the big one. That's the way I like it."
Oh, I loved that.
Which is, oh, that
Yes.
was just such a great line.
Brilliant.
And of course, I mean, when as soon as she said that, I was like, "Oh, Fiona's going to have some sort of dramatic victory, queening a pawn," which of course she did in the end, and it was great.
Yes.
Any other thoughts about determination and all of this?
Well, I think one other thought that this was not just Robert convincing these kids to learn more about chess and play each other. He had to convince and had to have deep determination, convincing the adults in the picture as well, not just Fiona's mom, but then other adults that these kids belonged. They belonged in these tournaments. They didn't have the money, but they're backward and they're from the slums, and but if we get the money, can they come? And this guy reluctantly, you know, sort of through the back door agreed and didn't even realize he had. And you know, just Robert had to be determined every inch of the way. It was hard fought to get these kids to these tournaments, to get Fiona, you know, in an airplane to fly to a tournament far away. And you know, money had to be raised, and you know, this became a community affair as well, a country affair in the end. So I wanted to say that it wasn't just having to work with and help the kids and help them gain skill and get better. You know, he fought, I think, on all fronts to make this happen and to raise these kids up.
Absolutely. And then one other thing I see here. So early on, when Fiona's the first day Fiona's there, the kids can be so cruel, bless them.
Yes.
It's like, you know, oh, Fiona, you know, they don't know her name yet, but they're like, oh, mm-hmm. you stink. Like she smells bad, and they're, you know, heckling her about this, that, and the other thing. And, mm-hmm. you know, that's, you know, like any kid who hears not yep. nice things, she doesn't take it super well. And she, I was very struck because I know a lot of people like this, including my dear wife. When you confront someone in that kind of way, they get this, well, to borrow from the movie, they get their determined face on. And she, yes. and in this case, Fiona went home and, you know, scrubbed every inch of herself and dressed up, well, nicer for the next time she was there. And, you know, she was determined not to be laughed at, determined to be taken seriously, at least in that particular arena, which is something yes. that I think eventually went on to serve her well. But that that jumped out at me because there's been a number of times people I know have sort of reacted that way.
Well, and I love that scene as well, but that it also reminded me of another quote that I wrote down too, that had to do with Coach Robert addressing the adults and trying to convince them that these kids belonged in these tournaments. And he said, why should she be denied the glory of victory just because she was born here?
Yeah.
So he pulled out all the stops in these conversations with people all along the way to convince them that these kids needed to keep moving forward because their skill level continued to move forward and they deserve to be there.
It's the ultimate testament to the importance of equality of opportunity.
Yes.
Which for a slew of reasons doesn't exist in a lot of places. And in this instance, it only existed because there was, you know, they had the wonderful advocate that was Coach Robert. But if he's not there, if she never learns, if Fiona never learns how to play chess, you know, she doesn't become this icon and we're not talking about her and all that sort of thing. So equality of opportunity is very important because you never know when something like this is going to happen.
Agree.
In whatever field or situation the yes. thing is.
Yep. Well, I think those are probably the end of my current observations. I think we're probably good to move on.
Yeah, that's the gist of them. Of course, we could spend quite a bit of time. This was a very quotable movie. There are a lot of great quotes.
I agree.
More than I typically write down for this sort of thing. So today, our spiritual practice. So I like switching things up. I like doing new and different spiritual practices. Today, our spiritual practice is Havruta. Which, first of all, is a very fun word to say, Havruta.
It's Havruta.
A Jewish practice. And it's not even necessarily, from what little I know about it, I think it's maybe a rabbinic thing, but it's more kind of like an academic exercise, from what I understand. But they okay. do it on the Harry Potter podcast, and it's one that I thoroughly enjoy. You need at least two people to do it, and you can okay. have more, but I think two is ideal. So one of us, in this case me, will present a question, and then I will answer the question, and then you will have to come up with a different answer for the question. And
okay.
the idea is that the truth is not in my answer or your answer alone, but in a combination or a mixture of our answers.
Okay, cool.
And then, well, you can ask a question or we can just be good with this. But anyway, so my question is, so Fiona eventually goes to Sudan and wins a big, her first international tournament. And we start to finally get the viewers and the people are like, okay, she's like the real deal. where do we go from here kind of thing. But when she gets back home, she's lazy, she doesn't want to do her chores and all this sort of stuff. So my question is, why is Fiona get so kind of lackadaisical after winning the Sudan tournament? And the answer that they kind of put forward is, once you taste, you can't untaste. She experienced this kind of nice lifestyle. She got her first kind of protracted, non-impoverished experience. But I'm going to go one step further than that, even. I think when she gets back home, she's sad that there's no one there that really understands her. This kind of gets to the whole bit we were talking about belonging. She can talk with the coach about chess, but when she's at the international chess tournament, like they're in the lobby of the hotel or whatever, and you see there's people just playing chess everywhere. And to some degree, it's this kind of sense of belonging. Something that I think, Mom, you'll probably experience when you go to this tennis tournament. Like you'll
Yes.
just be surrounded by people that have some degree of interest in tennis, which I'm presuming is not your typical experience.
True.
That has like an added level of meaning, I think. Even if you won't talk to the vast majority of the people there, just being around people that you know care deeply about something that you also care about, I think is really meaningful in some way. And so that's my answer as to why she's all lazy when she gets back. No one out there like fully gets chess quite like she does.
That's interesting. I think I was going for the cheap answer, which is the easy answer.
Yes, and that's what spiritual practices are all about. We're supposed to push
Dig
you
deeper.
beyond.
I know. So let me think. I'll start answering and see where it takes me. Yeah, when she came back, I was distressed because I thought, how quickly you forget, Fiona, where you came from. How quickly you think disparaging thoughts about your mother, who's been working hard, enabling you, partially enabling you, to go and do the things that you love. How can you not come back and be grateful and help her in these in-between times you always have? What changed? But it did seem to me one of the things that changed was that she experienced, unlike one of the other times, she was with the group and had more of the group experience. This time it was just her and another player, I think. And so she was singled out more and treated much more like the queen that she, was becoming, if you will, the queen of chess that she was becoming. And it went to her head. And she decided, oh, wow, I am all that and more. And my mother should be waiting on me hand and foot because these people here are bringing food to my table. Look at these French fries that I can have that I've never been able to have. Look at this. People are amazed at me. And I think her head just puffed up beyond all belief. And so what you said, I don't disagree with as well, but I think maybe a lot of it does exist right there in the reality of the answer that seems quickest and easiest to go to. I think a lot of it actually was that.
Yeah, that's probably kind of the big factor there too. I think also maybe what hit her the most, this was probably more on a subconscious level, but just the knowledge that she probably like she just couldn't really share this with her mom.
Yes. And one more thought. I appreciate that because I think that's true. So I think it was a combination of you're never going to understand this, and there's some real sorrow in that, along with you're beneath me. I have moved beyond you, which I do think kids come to that little space. Sometimes don't stay there long, sometimes stay there long. It just depends. But until they realize, oh, wow, I wouldn't be in this space if it weren't for what my parents have done, or, obviously talking about a good family that would point you that direction, not a dysfunctional one or difficult one. But yeah, that there was that sense of you're beneath me. I can no longer live in this space. This is just not my world anymore. So then that was all kind of sad. So I think it's a combination of all the things that we talked about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's the whole point of the Havruta practice. It's
yeah.
the whole thing.
And I like that because we kept going back and forth. We kept thinking of more angles to the answer to that question, and you know, not even some big deep question, which it doesn't have to be. But we often don't ask any question of what we read or what we see. That's why I like this practice, John. I think we have got to continually be curious people and be asking questions about what flows past our eyes, flows past our mind.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I feel like I had one other thought, but it's not coming to me.
Okay. All right. Well, help bring us down the home stretch here.
Yeah. So the final part is where we bless a character from the film here, either a quality or a moment, and sort of use the blessing as sort of a conduit to a prayer or a blessing for all people that exemplify that trait or moment that we pick out. So I'll go first. I'd like to bless Fiona's mom. She was the character I think that jumped out the most to me, which I was kind of surprised by. She is kind of confronted by her daughter who has this innate natural ability for a game that I have to believe is just not that interesting to her, in a world where they have to kind of just barely scrape by the idea of having leisure time to play a board, or at least what might be perceived as leisure time to play a board game is very foreign to her. She, though, ultimately kind of realizes that obviously she's very good, that Fiona is very good at chess, and that it means that she's very passionate about chess, and to, you know, let her do that sort of thing. And like at first she's very adamant that Fiona's not allowed to go to any of these tournaments because in all reality, like Fiona's probably never left the house before for like an overnight period. And so especially her going to Sudan, I have to imagine was terrifying. Going with this person who you presume is probably fine, but how sure can you really be? So I realized that whole process was incredibly challenging, I think, for her. But she ultimately shows Fiona as much support as she can, and she even shows up at the last. She comes to the last the last chess match in the Uganda national tournament, and she's watching the game, and you know, I have to imagine it's sort of going in one eyeball and out the other. But she's there to support Fiona, and yes. I thought that was really beautiful. So,
and just beaming with pride,
right?
You know,
so I'd like to bless that.
Wow. Well, I debated between two, and I honestly made my decision just before you said who you were going to bless. And so I'm going to bless actually the same person for probably different reasons. Some overlap, certainly. But I saw in Fiona's mom what I see and saw in my own mom and in myself moving forward toward you. I think of my own mom who made a huge Greyhound bus trip from northern Maine to Florida alone at age 15, as she had skipped grades in a one-room schoolhouse and went on to college at age 15.
Wow.
Met my dad, your grandpa, and married at age 16. Just went to 1 year of college, got married to a pastor, and, you know, had my brothers who are twins, those at age 18. So, you know, at such a young age, had been married, left home, and started a family. And sometimes I would resent watching her live vicariously through me, or feel like I would need to, you know, be, that I would need to do big things to make her proud or whatever, you know, but realizing that so much of that came from the lack in her own life to not really have a life, until her kids were grown and gone, and still having to work and clean and do, and just not really have much financially, and yet being proud of what her children accomplished. Mm-hmm. And so I looked at Fiona's mom and kind of making this big journey of, I don't know, you know, and my mom letting me go. And I left home at a young age. I went away to boarding high school. Interestingly enough, the same age that she left home at age 15.
I was just about to ask how old you left home.
Yeah. 15 and never went back. And same with her. Isn't that interesting?
That is interesting.
And then I watched you, John.
Your deadbeat son stayed in the house till 18.
Well, but then I watched you go beyond me, eclipse me in certain ways, educationally, go on to a school that wasn't on the table for me to choose. You know, it was like Bible college only. That's all that was offered to me. To do anything else would have been, a tragedy, not okay for a Christian pastor's daughter, you know. And here you went to University of Illinois, and I looked at that experience and longingly, and on to grad school, and just very, very interesting. We propel our kids beyond ourselves, and we do have some of that longing, and yet we're so proud of them. But it's quite a journey. I look at that and I think, quite a journey for my mom, who's just about to turn 80. My own journey, you know, launching you, and as a parent, you know, looking at Fiona's mom, you know, she walked that journey, and I really have to bless her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She deserves all the blessing.
Yeah.
I was very curious for what you saw in Fiona's mom and how that sort of impacted you as you were watching it. So.
Yeah. A lot of feels, a lot of thoughts there.
A lot of good stuff there for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I thank you, John. This is great. I love this practice. Got huge response from people, and would love to hear what you think of this podcast and just response in general to the podcast. It's always so encouraging to get emails. Again, email me at producer@anitalustria.com, producer@anitalustria.com.
Yeah, right.
And you can give
right in and tell us what you thought of of this, and what film or book you might like us to do in the future, or a TV show. Good. If you have any suggestions, or let us know what you're going through currently. We'd love to hear from you. And don't worry, I'll make sure you make it on air. I'm the listener's advocate.
Thank goodness there's somebody. John, I love it. So appreciate it. Glad you're with me today. And as always, to everyone else, I say, keep the conversation going.